Yeah, you know,
I love that whole idea.
thank you. Well, the idea was inspired by my experience on eBay. It was late one night, and I just typed in haunted. And I was like, I wonder what's on eBay that people are saying is haunted. And I was amazed. Try it sometime. You know, people are really selling, you know, haunted jewelry and my dead grandma's rings and, you know, a doily that moves on its own, that kind of stuff.
Oh, it's creepy.
Well, they get up, and what they do is they charge $100 for it so that some paranormal fan out there, you know, buys it. And I thought to myself, wow, a huckster could really take advantage of this.
Hello and welcome to Simply Radio. Tonight on the show, we have our panelists, Jeff Bush and Pia, and we're talking to Drew DeWalt, who is a horror film director, producer, you name it. He's done it on a horror film. And with that, I will introduce Drew and let him tell you a little bit more about himself. Here he goes. Drew?
Hi, how you doing? I guess this is my bio then, right?
It is your bio.
Well, it's funny. I actually came to horror in 2007. And originally I was coming from, I've been a Hollywood screenwriter for about 15 years, and I came from big action, buddy, heist, comedy, stupid macho stuff. I was a writer for, Jerry Bruckheimer, Tony Scott. My first feature was actually produced by Lawrence Bender and Quentin Tarantino. They championed my first script, and it's called Stark Raving Mad.
Cool.
And that was in 2002.
Can we stop and just say wow?
You're allowed. It was pretty
wild. Well. Yeah. I mean, I did know this.
I've had a great deal of experience in that realm, and I worked within the Writers Guild with the studios. At one point I had almost 11 scripts in various stages of not getting made in the development system. And then the writer's strike came in 2007, and a group of writer and director friends of mine, we weren't allowed to work, and the internet was just hitting that place where the broadband was allowing video to be uploaded easily. So, we started Feudio, and, that's where we started doing Feudio horror, and, I somehow got famous on the internet between there and here with, I think I've done almost 40 short films, maybe a little over now. I think I'm at 43, short horror. Cause at the time I thought, you know, there's been enough comedy online and that's kind of where I was coming from. And I wanted to move into horror. I see other writers and directors running, screaming from the quote unquote horror ghetto. Meanwhile, I'm running, screaming into it from the comedy ghetto. So, you know, the grass is always greener, I suppose. But, you know, horror is something I've loved since I was a child. I was raised in a haunted house in Ohio. There was a 160-year-old stagecoach stop. And I was a junkie for all those really campy, cheesy Friday night movie horror hosts like Elvira. And where I grew up, we had Big Chuck and Little John, Big Chuck and Houlihan. And I don't know if you guys know Ghoulardi, but there was those great costumes. The Ghoul, yes. Yeah.
I'm from Bay Village, Drew. I grew up in Bay Village, Ohio.
Oh my God! You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, sure do.
It was a golden age for horror, and it, you know, from a little boy, it turned me on. So that's kind of why I started in the big studio system, and I've actually come down to, I shouldn't say come down to, come over to horror because it's really where I want to be.
Well, that was a great bio. you know, it's like a lot of stuff that even through our research we didn't really pick up. And
we totally missed that one.
Yeah.
I mean,
and,
that's like...
you know, I'm fascinated about the
I'm still sitting Tarantino here with my jaw down.
And I'm sure a lot of people did you actually meet him personally or
mm-hmm. Yeah, he championed the script. It's called Stark Raving Mad. I wrote it with my writing partner at the time was David Schneider. And we'd sold some studio pictures, and this one went to A Band Apart, which is Quentin and Lawrence Bender's team. Yeah. And their producer there was John Baldecchi, and John Baldecchi showed it to the people there. Lawrence loved it. Quentin loved it. Quentin liked it because, you know, good old Quentin. He's like, hey, he writes like me. Great, bring him in. You know, so he loves himself, and it's in a good way, you know. So you know, he brought us in and they championed it. And, you know, we wanted to direct it. Dave and I, we were going to co-direct. And Quentin and John Baldecchi and Lawrence, they got behind us and they attached, they ended up being attached by Newmarket, which had just come off the heels of Memento and Donnie Darko. So that was, we were in really good company at the time. And, Stark Be Mad was, it was a heist film and it was still in the genre that we were in before. And, but it was a great writing experience and it was a great directing experience. And, you know, it's in the sort of Guy Ritchie genre, you know, okay. An American Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
What kind of budget did you have, Drew?
We had $7 million, and I think by filming in Canada at the time, it pumped it up to like a $9 million budget all in. And at the time, all I could think of, here's rookie directors for you. At the time, all I could think of was, oh, I can't wait till my $20 million feature. And you know, the business took such a gigantic shit between there and here that now it's like I would give my left leg for a $9 million budget again. I had no idea how good I had it.
Yeah, but from what I understand, you've done very well with smaller budgets. And I know Pia is a fan of your films, and I'd like for her to ask some more about that.
Well, I'm sitting here stumped because I had absolutely no idea about this previous stuff that you had done. So I guess I'll just move along to the questions that I did have. A lot of people download these podcasts, okay? But a lot of our audience are aspiring screenwriters, you know? So a lot of the writing questions are relevant to them. And I love horror myself, and I do try to write, and I did, by the way, submit to that contest that got 600 submissions. But anyway... I do read a lot of horror scripts, but very, very seldom do I read the script and actually feel horror. Sometimes I can read one and it's a good story, but when you read a script or write a script, you know, what makes it scary to you? What is it in the script that you can see will be scary on the screen?
Wow, that's a really good question, Pia. I find the same thing when I'm reading horror, and I do read a lot of fiction that's written word for horror. I mean, you know, Stephen King, Clive Barker, Ambrose Bierce, Poe.
Yep.
I think the one that really scared me was H.P. Lovecraft's Dreams of the Witch House, and I actually had a panic attack during that one because it was so surreal and strange, and I was reading it, and I was half asleep, and you know, I was almost going into, you know, I read at night to go to sleep, and I was in that twilight area where you're not quite awake and not quite asleep, so I was suddenly yanked into this hellish environment in this short story. And I woke up with a start, like one of those, you thought you fell down, startles, you know, when you're almost asleep. Mm-hmm. And then I went into this panic attack because I lost touch. I was like, ah! And I was sucked into it. What terrifies me, fear is an emotion, and for me it can sometimes be the strongest emotion, and I tend to feel viscerally when things are presented to me live or in a film or visual way. When things are written, and I think this probably was why you have this feeling too, is, you know, when it's written, you're intellectualizing, you know, words especially in scripts, which are kind of a shorthand for a story, not truly a story. A script is a shorthand, and it doesn't necessarily always hit the emotion of fear, because so much goes into fear that's instinctive and really unnoticed by us when we're watching. You know, trying to think. For instance, you know, one of my big theories in my work is we are essentially pack or herd animals by our instincts. And when I'm casting a lead who has to go up against my antagonists, whether it's supernatural or more natural, I watch for actors and actresses who can portray fear convincingly, because since we are pack and herd animals, we look around to our peers and our allies to see if they're frightened. And I think when you look at a screen hero and the screen hero is terrified, it indicates to you on a subconscious, instinctive level, you need to be scared now. This is a dangerous and awful situation. So for me, it's a lot of times I have to actually get into the casting process and get into the pre-production of making a film before it actually starts to really feel scary to me. I guess my instincts are, when I'm looking at these scripts, I look for those moments. I look for those moments. It's not when the hero opens the door and the thing comes out and grabs him. It's the 35 seconds going up to that door and touching the doorknob and the increase in heart rate and the increase in breathing and the formation of sweat on the brow. All these indicators that happen. And I look for moments like that. Those moments of, I'm not a big fan of boo scares or jump out scares, startles or screamers. I've done a few. And
I read your comments about Drag Me to Hell.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole movie based on them, and it did really well. But I love
Dread. I hated that movie. Oh, I hated that movie.
I liked it.
I thought it was absolutely terrible.
Really? Because of the scares?
No, just the whole – I could barely get through it. I thought it was absolutely terrible.
Well,
very disappointed in it.
I was stoned in a movie theater full of 20-something, so that might have had an indication of my view on the film.
Probably.
It was a rowdy crowd on opening night. But, I can see where that movie just wouldn't appeal to some people.
Well, what would your suggestion be to people that are trying to write horror scripts? What is your suggestion to them to think about when they write a horror script so that it will read scarier? Is it isolation or anything else or whatever?
Well, I think for me, the writing is on a really instinctive level, and I only write things to please myself. Because when you're a writer who you're working in a medium that you hope will be seen by many thousands, if not millions of people someday, you know, you're hoping that other people will be scared. But I think if you write to try and please them, I really think you'll fail. I always write to try and please myself because it's more entertaining. It's personal and it's private. So I think if you can scare yourself, if you can dig in deep to your, as far as you can go, and then go a little further on what scares you and what unnerves you. And, you know, think about those moments in your life. What was it that made them those sort of snapshots of terror?
But do you think that's true if like you're trying to write? I mean, if you're trying to write something that you're going to actually direct and produce, I mean, I could see writing for just yourself, yeah. But I mean, if you're going to try to sell something to someone else, do you think that's do you think that's appropriate, or do you think that you should write for yourself no matter what?
Well, you know, it just depends on what I mean. If you have your mind set on a big sale in a commercial environment and you want to go to the studios, and I've been there too, you do have to write with a certain template in mind. You know, you do have to write a three-act structure. You do have to write a hero that people can either they want to sleep with or they want to be. You know, there's a whole grocery list of things you have to do. And you do have to apply that template, but I think underneath it all, you have to also enjoy it, because if you're not enjoying it, that always comes through. That always comes. And most of the films that come through Hollywood are written for a paycheck, and you feel it on the screen. And a lot of people complain about Hollywood, and one of the roots of that is, you know, writers out here tend to get beaten so badly, you know, and they're left bloodied in the middle of the street and told, okay, now write. You know, And you're like, God, you know, and I've been there. I've been in the situation where I'm writing for a studio and I'm thinking, I think this would be great if I write X, Y, and Z, but they just told me in the meeting, if I come in with X, Y, and Z, they're going to fire me. So I'm going to write A, B, and C, and shit.
Yeah.
And you do it to keep your job, and it doesn't quite work, but it's pleased your boss. You know, it's a really tough spot to be for a writer. And I think a lot of guys end up there, but there's absolutely, you know what, Michael, you're absolutely right. There's a template you have to follow to do commercial success. And at the same time, you have basically what you're doing is applying your own tastes and appeals to genre templates.
Yeah.
Okay, I have one question then in regards to that. If let's say you're not exactly writing for a studio, but you're just trying to make a good, write a good horror script, are there certain things that you absolutely have to include in a good horror script?
I think so. Yeah, I think there's like three or four fundamentals that I apply to everything. And after I write, even if I'm not thinking of it consciously while I'm writing, before I show the script to anybody, I'll go and check. Like, I go through my checklist afterwards. And one of them is you hit the nail on the head, is isolation. You want to isolate your character, whether it's emotional isolation where no one believes them or no one wants to go where they're going, or physical isolation where they can't get to what they need to get to. They're stuck out somewhere. You know, it's the classic, you know, the woods, the castle, the dungeon. You know, the cell phone is the bane of all horror writers now. You know, the world is so accessible that you gotta, you know, it's almost comical. There's a best of list of the 50 best ways that horror writers have gotten rid of cell phones in horror films. You can Google that up. It's pretty funny. You know, dropping them in toilets, they run over them, the battery's dead. You know, you gotta, so isolation is big. And then,
no signal.
Yeah, right. No signal. And then, yeah, that one's actually especially devious because it gives them hope, and then you can dash it later when the monster steps on it or eats it or whatever. But isolation is huge. I would say include darkness. You know, darkness is just a fundamental. We can't see in it, and it's scary. And that's about as much as I know about it. The only film I know that broke that mold was The Shining, and Kubrick's purposefully set out to make darkness out of light, if that makes sense. He basically wanted to make a film so bright that it was terrifying. And if you watch it again, you'll see that every scene is filled with snow and big white windows, and it's never really dark. Even in the end of the hedge maze, the hedge maze itself is white. And he's one of the only people who's ever succeeded in making a film that's not dark.
That's true.
And some of the French
Shining
French,
was not one of my favorite films from him.
Me neither.
Oh, I loved it. I love it. It's one of my all-time favorites.
I don't know. He took an excellent story by King. I mean, that's one of his better books, and he turned it into a domestic tragedy. And I thought it didn't really have a lot of the horror that was in the book. I agree with you. Missing. But anyway, that's besides the point. We're talking about Drew at the moment. And can you tell us about this company that you just formed to make film?
Yeah, Daywalt Fear Factory came about in, I think, January, February. And it's essentially the same production team and actors and actresses that I've been using on the previous shorts. And they've all come with me. And, you know, we set out to just make good scares. And we're continuing to do that. We've made 5 films, I think, since then. And one of them, Polydeus, is just gotten picked up and purchased by FearNet. And we're excited about that.
Oh wow!
It's based on an urban myth. Polydeus is based on the story of Polybius, and it's Polybius. And if you wiki it, it's got a really interesting urban legend attached to it. Apparently, and this is the urban legend, in 1981, in an Oregon suburb outside of Portland, 4 video games were delivered to 4 different arcades. And when the kids played them, they all suffered from seizures, strokes, nightmares, hallucinations. They lost their memory. They blacked out while they were playing. And when formal complaints were later made, the video games couldn't be found. 4 vans came and picked them up the next day and took the games away. And it's one of these great sort of, it's really cool. It's a really interesting conspiracy. And I didn't hear about it until maybe a year or two ago. And I thought, man, that's fascinating. And it's ripe for horror. So we did a short that involves 2 young guys, gamer guys, who get their hands on the original ROM program for the game. And they've gotten it from Guantanamo Bay. One of their brothers was in the army, and he got a copy of it on a CD-ROM. And they put it in their computer, their home computer, and they play the original game as was intended. And horrible, horrible things happen, and they're sort of one of them is transported to another world. It's sort of a Tron meets Hellraiser.
That sounds fantastic.
We were really pleased, and Jeff Farley, who does all of my creature work, he created, I think, something that was completely twisted and inspired for the creature.
Is that your avatar on Facebook?
Yeah, actually, it is. It is. It's the, if you wanted to see it now, just find me on Facebook and check it out. It's like the whole thing was Cthulian in nature anyway. We wanted to sort of, without saying it, give a little nod to Lovecraft. And there's these creatures in this other world that eat madness. They consume human madness. So that's what they do, is they collect people from this video game into their plane of existence, and then they consume their madness by basically keeping them crazy for the rest of eternity.
You said it was a short film. How long is it?
It's an epic for a short. It's 13 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were a little surprised.
Well, it sounds great. I have one question about, you know, since you have been writing for quite a while and do a good job, and now you have all these shorts that are also really great quality and stuff, has that allowed you, you know, or have you received any sort of feedback from, you know, anyone higher up the film chain about, you know, you making a feature or something like that?
Yeah, it's opened quite a few doors. excuse me. It's opened some good doors. Wes Craven picked one of my shorts for the scariest thing on YouTube a couple years ago. And so I ended up getting in touch with Wes Craven's people, and that's a great group of guys. We're all sort of just looking for the right project. Fangoria magazine and Fangoria Online contacted me shortly after they caught wind of this of the shorts, and we began talking. And I found out from Tom DeFeo, who runs the show over there, that they're looking to re-energize and bring back the Fangoria film brand. They have a video on demand channel that's going to launch, and they have some deals that they want to get where they with like Blockbuster, where they put films out theatrically and limited release.
Mm-hmm.
So what they want to do is, you know, relaunch the Fangoria films, but they don't want to do slashers or cheap creature features. He wanted to really try and elevate it to cinema. Not to sound snotty, but I think you know what I mean. He didn't want to do trash cinema, and he didn't want to do grindhouse. He wanted it to be. He was looking at films like Wreck or Orphanage or Let the Right One In, and those were his models. And he said he really felt that, you know, doing the world building that I build, I could maybe bring something to it. So we've worked on a feature. We have a feature now that we're going to hopefully get greenlit in the next few months.
Good.
Fantastic.
Okay. A lot of our audience, too, are aspiring filmmakers themselves. What do you have any suggestions at all or tips for people that are trying to make horror short films on how they can make them, how to make the horror come across better? I know myself that I have had several shorts produced, and although some of them are quite good, I just don't feel that the fear is there. At least the fear that I felt when I wrote it is not there. Do you have any suggestions for filmmakers in that regard?
Oh man, I have a couple of those shorts too. It sucks. You know, you put so much work into it, and I can say that because, you know, I actually produced and directed them, and they still sucked. And I was like, oh man, I missed the mark on that one. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I got lucky a couple times, but going back to the filmmaking aspect, I want to address another great question. I want to address the filmmaking aspect and the horror aspect if I can. The filmmaking aspect, in 2004, I took a break from the business because that's when I was reevaluating what I wanted to do, and because I had so many movies that I was selling movies, and I had a nice career going, but nothing was getting made at the time, and it was really very frustrating. Movies just get tied up and shelved, and, you know, you make a living, but, you know, it has to get made to end up on IMDb, and it has to get made for you to feel fulfilled as an artist, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I took a little time off, and I decided to go teach film and see what that would do. And I taught, essentially, what amounts to Screenwriting 101 here in Los Angeles at LA Mission College. And it was a community college with not a lot of money, and the kids going there were kids who were hungry for education, and the kids in their film program were hungry to be in film, you know, underprivileged kids, kids who didn't really have much growing up, you know, and they got into school, and they're at this community college hoping to Christ that they can get a decent film education. And I had an amazing experience with them because I think I learned more from them than they ever learned from me. For starters, I quit the business for a year and then ended up getting three jobs that same semester. So I told the kids, you're coming with me. So I took them on my productions. But my goal as a teacher there was to show them how to write a short script. And then in Film 101, which is the next class, they would take it and create their short film and produce it. And when I was seeing some of the footage coming back, I was blown away. And this is 2004. And I was like, how did you get that shot? How did you light that car so beautifully? There was one kid who had a scene in a car, and it was lit. It was gorgeous. I mean, it looked like something from Fincher. And I'd learned through the studio system. You need three Condors and 200 Ks and, you know, 16 guys to wipe the windshield down and make sure the car is perfect. And, you know, it was a union system that works really well. But I was like, how did you guys do that? And he's like, well, we went to Albertsons, and that's a grocery store here. And I said, what? Mm-hmm. And they said, if you go in the light bulb aisle, there's these little lights. You tap them once, and they go on. You tap them off, they go off. I'm like, stick-ups? They lit the thing with stick-ups. They lined the dashboard with stick-ups, and they put one under the visor to light from above to give a fill.
How clever.
I was like,
yeah, that's
oh my
great.
And I said, what did you film using? Because it looks like film. It's gorgeous. And they're like, well, it's the new Canon XL2, which at the time was the new hot camera coming off of 28 Days Later, which was the XL1. Then Canon came out with an XL2, which shot 24p. Anyway, I didn't know. I was a screenwriter who didn't have a ton of technical knowledge. And I said, oh my God, you guys got to teach me this stuff. And then they did. They were awesome. These kids were like little techno wizards. All of them are, I think, working in the career in the film business now because they were early adapters of the digital technology. And I went out and got myself a Canon XL2 like the next week and started shooting. And my recommendation to filmmakers, especially short film and horror makers, is get yourself a camera because they're totally 100% accessible now. I'm using the Canon 7D, which is it's the first high def camera that's halfway decent, and it's literally 1/10 of the cost of the Red camera. So I say get a camera and just start shooting and practice. You know, one of the things that caused my early group to start filming together was we would have D&D nights, you know, Dungeons and Dragons nights, or we'd have poker nights, and it was so hard to just get everybody in the same room that I said, I feel like a movie coordinator. And they said, well, why don't you just make a movie? And I was like, you know what? We should, instead of poker night, why don't we have movie night where we, you know, it's like, hey, you guys want to make a movie on Saturday? And he's like, yeah, I'll bring my gels. Okay, I got a sound deal. I bring my camera. This is, you know, after I learned how to use it from the kids. And we started making these shorts. That's how it happened. Now, as far as to address the horror aspect of your question, Pia, I would say that learn to light. Because I had
Hitchcock.
To... Yeah, learn to light, because lighting can be one of the most elusive things, and it can give you the highest production value of anything you'd ever want. I mean, most of the shorts were shot in my two-bedroom apartment, or in a friend's garage, or, you know, someone would say, I got a warehouse for the night, you want to make a movie? And bang, we're off shooting at a warehouse because we had it. And somebody could, like, write a horror story about a warehouse. but you know, practice lighting, watch the films you love, freeze frame them, and try and recreate the lighting in your living room. You can do it, if, you know, especially with the new digital technology and all these low light cameras. You don't need what you needed, like when I got out of film school 15 years ago.
Well, one last question from me then. Which one of all your shorts that you have made is your favorite?
Oh, that's not fair. It's like which child's your favorite child?
Well, you always have a favorite child, don't you?
Tia, yeah. No.
I actually think it's Polydeus. It's unfortunately it's not out yet, but it'll be out, I think, in the next month or two on FearNet. Because it was a real personal best for Jeff Farley, our creature fabricator, and it was a personal best for me. And I was honored to work with Tim Sharp, who was one of the people who was in my first feature. I found Tim when we were casting for Stark Raving Mad, and he played the second lead of that film. And here it is. 8 years later, and we're still friends and still working. And that was a comedy, and this was, you know, a pretty serious drama where he had to go through some harsh things under the hands of these evil things, these evil creatures. And I was really pleased with his performance. It's one of those things where everything came together. You know, in some of those movies that I totally flubbed, this one was one that it was a perfect storm of good things. So Polydeus is probably my current favorite. But of the ones that are out right now that people can go see, I really like Suicide Girl because it had a little bit of a social commentary. And when I heard about the did you see the one of the kids, there was a mom and a kid who were picking on a girl on MySpace, and they bullied her to the cyberbullying until she killed herself. That was the true story.
Oh. Yeah, I read about that, yeah.
It was horrible. And I thought, yeah. I wanted to do something. I wanted to respond to it some way. So I thought, well, on behalf of the poor girl who committed suicide, I created this little horror short. Not like, it's not exactly altruistic. It was, you know, it is a horror film after all. But, you know, I think that one was another one of my favorites as far as the scares go, because it tends to really get people.
Well, can I ask you one more question? I don't know
sure.
if I have time, you know. I might get beat up
Jeez,
by Cunero.
Yeah.
But I read just recently that you go around to visit haunted places. Tell me about that.
Well, it's funny. I have two children. I have a 6-year-old girl and I have a 16-month-old little boy. And last March, right about the time he was, I think, 8 or 9 months old, I had gotten the assignment by Fangoria to write Ringbearer, the feature, the vampire film that I'm doing with them. but I was way behind on the writing schedule because, you know, my son was waking up in the middle of the night. And then when I was up all night, I was exhausted the next day and, you know, the usual baby stuff. And, I told my wife, I said, you know, I'd love to just take two nights, go to some cheap motel, even if it's a Motel 6, take my laptop and just go sit and write for 48 hours without any babies crying or anybody spilling juice on me or, you know, no diapers, you know, just one solid writing session. I know I can get ahead. And then I went on Expedia.com and I was just browsing around for a cheap hotel thinking, oh, you know, I'll get a good deal somewhere, you know. And there was the Queen Mary in Long Beach, which is near here. And it's an ocean liner that's been dry docked for a while. And it's I think it's nearly 100 years old, if not 100 years old. And it's akin
and
to like...
haunted.
And haunted as hell. And I thought, ooh, I'm going to write my horror film in a haunted ocean liner hotel.
Hmm.
And I got there and foolishly started tweeting about it. And everybody was telling me, go in this room, go in that room, go do this. Oh, did you go in the ladies' restroom? It's haunted. And, you know, touch the wall. It gets hot. And so I start doing that, and I'm tweeting from location and end up getting no work done. And I have, like, a Twitter chain of 3 days long. And all I did was hunt ghosts, and I'm, like, the least qualified guy in the world to hunt ghosts. It's sort of like sending Scooby in, you know?
Okay,
Drew, I've got a question for you. A little bit ago, you talked about if you want to write for a studio or get picked up, you need to follow a typical standard 3X structure, et cetera, et cetera. And I hear that all the time, and it always upsets me because it seems to me that the horror movies that do the best are the ones that step outside the box. Hostel, for instance, very non-standard structure. And it started a whole, you know, revolution in a whole new genre. Mm-hmm. And every time people seem to say the same things, no, it has to be like this, it has to follow 3X structure, it must do this, this, and this. And I don't understand why producers or the people that are in charge feel that way.
You know, I am 100,000% in agreement with you, man, because it sucks. Here's what it comes down to. William Goldman said, nobody knows anything. Just write. And it's, you know, I just had a meeting recently with some executives who saw one of my horror scripts and thought, oh, this is great. He's, you know, it's a good writing. Let's meet with him. So I come in to meet with them and they're like, we loved your script, which is a full on haunted creature feature, right? And it's all about ghosts that are creepy crawlies that come out of the woodwork in this house. And anyway, there's, you know, it's a haunted house story with like really creepy demonic mm-hmm. Clive Barker style creatures. So they tell me, we love it, except for the creatures. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, really? So they're like, well, can we write it so that it's just a ghost and you don't have the creatures? And I said, okay, well, I'm willing to take a stab at it because, you know, you guys have money and I don't. So I'll try that out. I'm a whore. That's you know, the other word for writer is, you know, whore, starving.
Yeah.
So I'd give it a try. And on the way home, I thought, you know, when I walked in, I asked them what they were looking for in a writer. And they said, we want world builders. We want Guillermo del Toro. We want Peter Jackson. You know, we want guys who are going to take us to a new place. And I thought, well, God damn it. You know, I took you to a new place and you said, get rid of that new stuff. We're scared of it. So I, you know, at that point, you know, if you could see me, my hair's all standing on end from me trying to pull it out, Jeff. I don't have an answer for it. And I agree. And, you know, sometimes they get the rug pulled out from them, and then they go, well, it was a fluke. Or I've had this answer, too. Well, you can't do that. That's Guillermo del Toro. He only, you know, it took him to do that. And it's like, well, who was he before he was Guillermo del Toro? He was just some guy.
Exactly. Right, exactly. I agree 100% with you.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're asking me as a friend, sort of colleague guy, I say write what you want and keep doing it, you know, craft it till it's perfect for you. The stock answer, though, if you want to get into the system and you want to be a safe choice for them who's a regular working writer, stick to their stupid template.
But yeah. Is safe right? Does safe really make money? Most of the horror movies that are produced, even on, you know, direct-to-video, are bad movies that people don't like. The fans don't even like them. Why
no,
is it that they have to be like that? I don't get it.
I don't either.
It's kind of a hazing, you know? Kind of like you're new to the industry and you have to go through these gates in order to get in. And those are the gates. And
yeah.
And you know, it like so you go through the you want to get in the industry, you go through the gates and there's no other way in. Well, there's probably other ways in, but the gates are the easy way in or the standard way in.
The normal way in, yep.
Well, anyway, what I had to do. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Michael. Go ahead.
Oh, well, no, because if you have something more to say, I was going to close up otherwise.
Oh, yeah. Just one closing thought is, you know, what I had to do to show people that, you know, whether I'm a successful world builder or not, people will soon find out, you know. But I always wanted to create worlds, and I thought, you know, if we can create a new place to go play in, then we've succeeded as artists. And I think you just have to keep trying. For me, it was create short films, because a lot of these guys are real magpies. They go for shiny, easy, low-hanging fruit.
Mm.
So if you create a short film, you can show them physically, put it in front of them, this is what my world looks like. Mm. I know you can't understand if I just use words. I got to actually put a picture in front of you, like the Denny's menu. Mm. So that's what my hope and desire was, so that I could shortcut past that sort of hazing ritual you're talking about, that sort of write the template, do the thing, you know.
One last question then. Are you saying that a short teaser to go with your script is a good idea?
Yes, I think it's a great idea. I think the more you can do to show people what you're going to do, especially people who, you know, might be challenged with words, even though that's their job, the more you can do to show them, the better off you are. You know, you can, because they won't know what it is when they read it until they see it in front of them. They're like, oh, this isn't scary. And then you show them a picture of it, and then they go, oh, my God, you mean it has a doll head and hypodermic needles for fingers? Oh, that is scary now that I see it.
Hmm.
But they can sometimes be a little limited in their worldview, because, you know, they're looking at bottom lines and bank statements and weekend grosses and all that bullshit. And I think that, you know, they depend on the artist, and the artist has to sometimes show the vision instead of just telling it.
Hmm. And that's a good closing point. Show the vision, don't just tell it. And, yeah, you know, we're always saying that on Simply Scripts. We're saying show, don't tell.
That's exactly.
And, okay, and thank you so much, Drew. You were a very excellent guest. And we hope to have you back again sometime. And
awesome.
We'll be watching what you do in the future.
Oh, thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the time online here, so thank you.
No worries. Thanks again, and
nice talking
thank
to you
all for listening to Simply Radio.